Okay, let us move on to the Q&A portion. We've obviously taken a lot of questions already, but a lot of these are prepared questions that I grabbed from patrons and email and Facebook and Twitter and all sorts of sources everywhere you guys send us. All these places are fine places to send us questions. Twitter, Facebook, Patreon, regular email, which is westeroshistory@gmail.com. We'll take them anyway.
My following is growing on Twitter, by the way, at Dancing Sean.
Yeah,
follow. And you can give me questions or haikus there.
That's right. Sean is trying to lead the Game of Thrones haiku charge on Twitter, and he's staying very consistent with it. A lot of people are getting involved. Fun times. Okay, so first question from Jason S. The only question that matters. Will we see Ghost riding Drogon? Most epic scene ever. Well, I guess we're not going to take any more questions because that's the only question that matters. But yeah, of course we're going to see that. Of course we're going to see Ghost riding. Are you crazy? Of course we're going to see that. I mean, Game of Thrones, that's the Song of Ice and Fire. An ice wolf riding a fire dragon. Yeah, and people are going to write songs about it. Like, yeah, because it's the Song of Ice and Fire. Yeah, of course we're going to see that. Obviously. Question from Rebecca Rorta. Did you watch the newest Game of Jones video on Late Night with Seth Meyers where Seth and Leslie Jones watch an episode of Game of Thrones? And Conleth Hill shows up, which is Varys, and acts like he doesn't know what side he's on. Who am I with? I think he's probably just playing around, but it's funny to think about the idea that he's throwing a little like semi-spoiler by pretending to not be on Danny's side. It definitely made me think. By the way, I definitely recommend it, Game of Jones.
I haven't seen it. It's really funny. I fail by not... I mean, it's not too late. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
And as long as it's come up, there's two other Saturday Night Live videos. One where Melisandre is at a dinner party.
Yeah, from a few years ago.
And then one where John is at a dinner party. And they're so hilarious. They're like in character, all brooding and serious. And everyone else is like, do you have any siblings?
yeah, they're all killed and murdered. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. Highly recommend checking all those out. Really funny. I love that this fandom is big enough to feature multiple scenes on Saturday Night Live. And it just all over the place. 30 Rock not 30 Rock, but 30 Rock was over before Game of Thrones started. But Parks and Rec is another one that had a lot of Game of Thrones references. Yeah. I mean, Game of Thrones references are all over TV shows everywhere. I mean, it's really common, but it's awesome when it's some of our favorites. Okay, next question is from Alejandro. Should there still be Night's Watchmen at Eastwatch? Do you think there would be any conflict between the Black Brothers and Tormund's Wildlings? I can't imagine Cotter Pike would be happy about Jaunt, a deserter, sending the Wildlings to Eastwatch. Yeah, it's kind of unclear what the Night's Watch at Eastwatch think of Jaunt and all and everything. But I don't know. I think that if they may have a little trouble with Tormund and his Wildlings, I feel like they recognize the greater threat. And that, yeah, maybe they don't like hanging out with Wildlings, but it's the dead are a much bigger problem. I could see maybe a little bit of problem, but I don't know if they're going to go that way. Because there's too many characters that aren't central for this to be a plot.
It's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I think in a book it might happen. Well, though it's already happening in the books. Wildlings and Brothers not getting along.
There have been other moments where people who should have recognized the threat were still resistant to, joining the right team or bending the knee to the right person or whatever. And additionally, another conflict that might come. And we sort of expected, there was a scene in the trailers of Jon, looks like he's fighting someone in the north who looks like isn't a zombie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a wildling or someone, it's really unclear and vague, but it stirred thoughts in me of what kind of conflict there might be. Before the season started, something I was predicting, kind of a general prediction I was making, is that people on the same side with the same goals would still be in conflict over how to accomplish the goals. And again, we're sort of seeing that in different areas now, but it hasn't quite come to a head. But this is a place where it may come to head in Eastwatch, where the men there aren't as on board. They haven't been part of the development of John's leadership and position and reasoning and everything. They've been separated from that.
Yeah.
And weren't a witness to the wildlings coming across and how they were accepted
or not. Well, we can't assume that, though. We can't assume that. Like, for all we know,
maybe
we haven't
seen... Maybe some men have traveled back and forth.
Right. We haven't seen Dollar said except for 1 second with Bran and Mira. And there's probably communication between the brothers on the different towers.
But there's a difference between communication and witness.
Oh, absolutely. Right? I agree.
Add to that, we've got, potentially at least, the Brotherhood heading there. Now, what do you think the Wildlings might think of the Brotherhood, of the Lord of Light, after Melisandre has Mance burned? Now, here come these other Yahoos preaching about the Lord of Light, they're going to be suspicious of this. Maybe,
I'm not sure.
Right?
I don't know that they will, because the same magic brought John back. And they are big fans of John. I'm not sure that's a problem. But it's a good point.
A potential conflict.
All right, Aaron Habig, another super chat. For Misty 306, wasn't Jorah with Golden Company before meeting Dany? Yes, he mentions that in season 4. That's not a book thing. It's a show only thing, so it's easy for a lot of people to miss. I certainly missed it. It was pointed out to us earlier in the week, and we brought it up on Wednesday, I believe, maybe if not sooner. And so that absolutely could be a thing of like the Golden Company maybe isn't going to fight for Cersei. After all, maybe Jorah can get in there and wrangle things or change things around or have some sort of impact. That could definitely come up. That could be Jorah's way to... Maybe Jorah doesn't want to show up empty-handed with Dany. Just, hey, I'm back. You know, I mean, she told him just get yourself cured and come back. So maybe that's all he needs to do. But if he wants to make a big splash, bringing 10,000 soldiers would be a pretty sweet thing for Jorah to do. So it's definitely possible. I kind of hope so. Because I really hope that we see the whole Golden Company, at least so we can see those golden skulls on pikes and hear that battle cry.
That's a bigger thought than I had, that he might bring them. I thought it might be more of he's at Dragonstone. Cersei uses Iron Bank money to get Golden Company. Then Jorah can say, I serve with them. I know how they operate. We can't face them in a field. Or their weakness is the flank or whatever. You know.
All right, let's move on. Let's try to get in as many questions as we can here. From Brittany Strickland. Now that Bran is essentially gone, do you think he'll still have any desire to find out about his family through the visions? I keep hoping he would show us the rest of the Tower of Joy, but the scene with Mira made me doubt it. Well, he did say he needed to talk to Jon when Sansa brought Jon up. So I think he understands that it's important, because I think Bran is focused on the war for the Dawn, focused on the Night's King, and I think that might matter. I don't know that he cares about Jon because he's part of his family, but I think he realizes that Jon is important, and Jon's heritage may matter. Bran may see it that way. So I don't know if it's a family thing. It might very well be because we've talked about how Bran seems to have lost a lot of his humanity, but it doesn't mean it might come back a little bit. It doesn't mean it's all gone, you know?
My fear even is that Bran, let me back up a little. In the same way that I think Bran might know that Littlefinger, the things that Littlefinger's done, he might also even care about them, right? He might not care about them, but he may know and care and still not rat Littlefinger out because he knows Littlefinger has some role in his war against the Night King. Bran might know that, or seems like he should know Jon's heritage, right? And he might care about it, but he might not care about it because it might not matter. He might just need to talk to Jon because he knows Jon is key in his battle against the Night King. It doesn't matter who his mom and dad are. You just need to go up north and fight the zombies before they get across Eastwatch. And it's my fear. Maybe it is important that he's actually Targaryen. Maybe his heritage, his lineage, his potential sitting on the Iron Throne somehow is connected to stuff. But I can see how, to Bran, none of that matters. All that matters is that you get your Valyrian steel sword and get up north and fight these bad guys, you know.
From Sir Roger the Night Cook, do you guys think that Arya deciding not to kill Lady Crane was foreshadowing for her decision not to kill Cersei and instead go to Winterfell? Or do you think they potentially worked together to foreshadow another decision of the sort? That is an awesome catch. In fact, I think we may have talked about it at the time. Maybe one of the Radio Westeros crew mentioned that possibility. Because Lady Crane, as you guys remember, she was playing Cersei.
In the play, the Bravosi play. Actors, yeah.
That's awesome. And by the way, and that is why I always talk about rereading the books, because there's sort of so many things like that where George gives you the foreshadowing, or not the foreshadowing, he gives you the resolution before the foreshadowing. And that kind of thing happens in the show sometimes too. And this is why we need to watch the whole show all over. And we're going to have 2 years between seasons, so we'll probably do that. That might be a way for us to keep some content coming with Sean, especially is to rewatch some of the early seasons and look for things like that. Look for the foreshadowing that played out later that we didn't catch at the time.
You think 7 times would be enough. Going for 8.
Great catch. From Suzanne Beam, who is Sean's hand of the beard now. Thank you very much, Suzanne. I got your full nickname somewhere else in the document. I think you changed it later. I know Radio Westeros shot down the idea that there was a deeper meaning to Cersei's comment about hiring the Golden Company to recover things that belong to her. However, I think she may well want to use them to recapture Casterly Rock from the Unsullied. What do you think? 10,000 sellswords versus somewhat fewer than 8,000 Unsullied. I'm not sure that she is concerned with Casterly Rock in the short term. I think that with Jaime's plan, the way it played out is that they set it up so that the Golden Company, or so that the Unsullied would have to give up Casterly Rock because there's no food there. And it's lost its strategic value. So if the Unsullied do stay there, well, that's great for Cersei and Jaime, because then they're
that
not
that means they're not
fighting.
Anywhere else. They're yeah. not sieging King's Landing, yeah.
So I think Cersei wants Castle Rock back, but I don't think it's a burning priority. So I think that the she could probably take it back at her leisure when they just leave it. So I don't think she's going to want to have a showdown with them. I think she'll just wait for them to leave because they need to leave because of food, or because they need to get back and help their queen do other things. So I think that they can just let that take care of itself. But at the same time, I'm not sure what the Golden Company will do if they take the field. Maybe they, like we hypothesized the idea that they'll have some scorpions and anti-dragon stuff or something. I don't know.
I also continue to stir on what it was Cersei meant when she said there are things I want to get back to.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible that I misinterpreted that and there's something more deeper that she meant by that. From a question from Sir Kyle Dane, wielder of Sundown, the Axe of the Afternoon. He says, new theory on Heartsbane, Sam's dad's sword. Sam finds out how to rework Valyrian steel, sends the info and sword to Jon just as Gendry shows at Dragonstone. They turn the sword into dozens of Valyrian arrowheads, making the Valyrian steel impact against the White Walkers much larger. Thoughts? Valyrian steel might be too valuable to throw away in arrowheads, especially because obsidian will do the same thing. And there's tons of that.
Yeah.
However, the idea of Heartsbane being split into two smaller swords like ice, that I could see happening, especially because I like the idea of Gendry, that being one of the many range of options for Gendry to do is to be the new Valyrian steel blacksmith guy.
Yeah.
Right? He worked for the guy, Tob Homot. He was apprenticed to the guy who reworked ice. That's the same dude. So he maybe has already seen it in action. He's already possibly seen this happen. He may already have a little bit of inkling of how it works.
It seems like foreshadowing. If it does happen, we'll think back to that sequence when Tywin's having him forge two new swords and seeing how clearly that set it up to happen again.
So I like the seed here, which is that they rework Heartsbane into something else. I'm kind of skeptical that it would be arrowhead specifically, but I like the thought. It's certainly possible. Red Rhaemyra Ravenhorn of Skagos. What's with Drogon looking like he's going to burn Jon? Is this Daenerys arriving or trying to stop him from leaving to go to Eastwatch? Will Rhaegal protect Jon? This part of the trailer gave me the most pause. Yeah, I wonder, we were wondering if he's going to get any direct interaction with dragons other than Dany, like, staring him down with Drogon. I think we covered a lot of that scene already, but the idea of Rhaegal protecting Jon, I kind of doubt it, but man, that would be a killer twist.
It does seem like if the dragons are going to get paired with other characters, Rhaegal and Jon would be the pairing.
Yeah, it does. It screams that, you know, Viserion, and there's only two possibilities of dragons out of the two. It's like, yeah, the one with your father's name, that one. Yeah, of course. From Lady Lisa, the Cobalt Unicorn. Along those lines, when do you guys think Jon will get some interaction time with the dragons? How will he make some connection with Rhaegal? Do you think something magical will happen? Yeah, I wonder if they're just going to delay that a little longer. It could be one of those things that they want to hide the trailer from. They don't want to show even the slightest inkling of Jon interacting with Rhaegal, because as soon as they show that, it gives the whole game away.
Yeah.
So as far as when, I feel like it might start to happen this season, but on the other hand, he's almost certainly leaving Dragonstone this episode. And it just, I don't know if they're going to deal with it now or just kind of keep us on our toes and send it up some other time. I lean towards it, them waiting.
I do too, but it gets me so excited. I know it must get so many other people so excited too, and I feel like the filmmakers know how excited everyone will get by that. They're gonna do it eventually. They just have right? They just have to, right?
They just have to, yeah.
Can you imagine at the end of everything if there's never a click game ball, right?
Question from Sir Guinness, Servant of the Secret Fire. Hey there, Joey. Great week hearing from you guys as usual. The only prediction slash question for you I have is this. If it all goes according to our want slash plans as Soul Watchers, Cersei dies. Jaime gets some kind of retribution. Jon and Daenerys get married and rule the Seven Kingdoms. Arya finishes her list. Bran is both the Three-Eyed Raven and the Second Builder. Lyanna Mormont rules the North. The White Walkers are destroyed. The Children make a resurrection. Sansa finds a non-abusive relationship, etc., etc. What are we left with and how will we honestly feel? If we get all the things we want to see, are we satisfied or do we want to see... You know, or would that be too nice? George himself has said it'll be a bittersweet ending. Yeah. I imagine the showrunners, I mean, they can do their own thing, but I imagine it'll be bittersweet for the showrunners will do the same thing. We won't get all the things we want. You know, there'll be some, like, maybe Lord of the Rings where Sam or Frodo is successful, but he's permanently, like, broken psychologically. Not broken, but very damaged.
I've had this thought quite a bit, just thinking about how it's all going to end. We all have these sort of characters we're rooting for and kind of these... endings we want for them, the endings they want for themselves. Some of them, by the way, if you even think about what ending they want for themselves, to whatever extent they've even thought about it, it's not necessarily happy. Like, what does Arya think her life is going to be? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What does she think she's going to end up? And her specifically, when I think about, she's probably going to die. She puts herself in harm's way. This is sort of my litmus test of who I think is going to die or not. Characters that put themselves in harm's way, like Arya and Jon,
Brienne,
are, right, they're more likely to die. They're going off in battle with swords. Characters like, and I don't mean to be judging them differently, right? I think I would not be a character running off in a battle with a sword. I would rather be in a council making decisions, you know, organizing grain, you know. I would like to think if I was shipped off to battle, I would do well. I'd be good at it and fight bravely, but I think I'd be more likely to die in that scenario. And so in the show, the people who are more likely to die are ones running around with swords like Arya. And by the way, I brought this point up in the Game of Thrones podcast, and Hannah's like, gee, Sean, chill out. She just got back home. But the fact is, the ending's probably not going to be a bunch of sweet, happy endings for everyone, especially when you consider it's almost impossible because we have characters pitted against each other.
Yes.
And this idea that George isn't going to give us happy endings and doesn't have these black and white characters in the first place is part of what makes me stew so much over on what does the Night King want? What is his goal? What is, you know, we're thinking about what we want and what Jon wants and what Dany wants, right? But what does the Night King want? That's much more of a mystery, but I feel like you can't ignore it when you think mm-hmm. about the end game.
They can't, so. You know, yeah, I agree. And I see someone asking us to talk about Night King Beard in his, you know, because of course we would talk about beards, but actually we're going to talk about the tomorrow on Sunday's stream. I have a few thoughts on that I didn't have earlier in the week as to why he had a beard, has a beard in the cave painting and doesn't now. So
Benjamin Button theory. That's where you're going, right?
So again, just to repeat, tomorrow that's at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard, 7 GMT with Lucifer Means Lightbringer. Live streaming, taking questions, and explaining about the symbols as much as we can. Okay, next question. Still, we're going to run for a little under 30 minutes more here. Still time to get in a super chat. And we've got a lot of prepared questions still to get through as well. From the Bastard of the Wolfswood. I'm hoping we get to see Tyrion prove his loyalty to Dany by pointing out Jaime from the surviving Lannister soldiers. No one in Dany's current camp knows what Jaime looks like except for Tyrion. Of course, that is if Jaime survives his potential drowning by removing his elaborate armor, making him look like any common Lannister soldier. That'd be kind of interesting if he's able to just go incognito or something like that. I kind of doubt it, but because he is too blinged out. He's got his golden hand and everything. And I don't see him being able to take his own armor off with one hand underwater.
Yeah, there's a lot of logistical problems with that.
But that would be an interesting way for Tyrion to be like, yep, that's my brother right there. I don't think he'll do that. But he might have to. Like, he kind of has to if he's there. What is he going to do? Like, get out of here, Jaime. Just sneak away. Just hide under that pile of bodies. Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough one. I think that
it would be interesting if in some way, in some manner, at some point, Tyrion helps Jaime escape. Jaime helped Tyrion escape.
Exactly. Yeah. I could let him out just like... The problem with letting him out is if he's let out from Dragonstone, he's going to need a ship. Yeah.
Gendry can pick him up.
From Lord Mark... of course. From Lord Mark Joseph, the Snow in Winterfell. In the beginning of the episode 4, they made it seem as though Bronn is disgruntled, but then they give him his heroic sequence. He even got to the Kit Harington Battle of the Bastards treatment with the tracking shot through the battle. I totally agree. That's what that was. What do you think that foreshadows? Bronn dying or Bronn flipping and going back to Tyrion? I think the fandom's kind of split on this, but I definitely lean towards him flipping to Tyrion, to Dany, because he clearly isn't loyal to the Lannisters because he's loyal to the Lannisters. And Dany should be fine with that. Like, if Lannister soldiers are going to bend the knee, then why not Bronn? Why not? You know, why not take Bronn also? He's clearly a badass. She saw what he did.
I will say at this point, I think Bronn is genuinely loyal to Jaime.
Okay.
I feel that.
I thought he was saving Jaime because he wanted his castle. When he dove to save Jaime, he didn't care about Jaime. He was saving that promised castle.
I think he can want the castle and want money and want glory and be loyal to Jaime.
Okay, fair enough. All right, for another one from Mark Joseph. What will be the reason Gendry comes back? Will it be a need for allies? Will Dany want him to try to raise the Stormlords? Or will it be to see if he can make Dragonglass into weapons? Well, the reason he comes back is tough because we've outlined several possibilities and I don't necessarily favor one over the other because they all seem like they fit really well. The Stormlords one, yes. Him being a claimant through the Golden Company, yes, that's possible. Him being blacksmith guy, also possible. Him somehow being the guy on the Iron Throne at the end of it all, I guess that's possible, but I'm down on that because I think the Iron Throne is toast. But, yeah.
I think for that to happen, it would take a huge turn in the direction of characters and development, you know.
And, yeah.
And I don't think it's impossible. I just think it's super unlikely.
Hmm. Okay, so from Devin C., here's another interesting question. If the man in the season trailer who seemed to have just got out of the crate and unsheathed the sword in a Lannister-controlled area is the Hound, then that may be one of the things Cersei wants retrieved if she finds out he's even out there. I don't know that she even knows he exists, though. I don't think she knows he's alive. So I don't know if she would be like, bring me back the Hound. She doesn't... I kind of doubt she has spared a thought for him. But that's an interesting idea, because he did, as the question continues, he did abandon Joffrey in the heat of battle, and she might be upset with that. But
She also might want Sansa back.
Yeah, I agree. She wants Sansa, maybe Littlefinger as well, like all these people that kind of turned on her. She certainly isn't quick to forget that sort of thing. Moving on, because we're trying to get through a bunch here. Mikhail Calvert asks, do you think that the Three-Eyed Raven began a sort of second life when he downloaded into Bran? Could that be why Bran is not really there? I think that's part of it, because he's overwhelmed with his new powers. And yes, if it's a title as much as it is like a role, like a mystical role that gets taken up by the next person, you know, Bran was that next person. And I think he's still adjusting to it. I think that's a big part of it. He's still adjusting to it. Plus, he's still just, his human side is probably feeling pretty sad. Summer and Hodor and the Children of the Forest, like, and he probably should blame himself for that, because he went wandering through the Vision world, through the Weirwood network, when he was told not, like, wasn't supposed to do that.
You got to imagine, even if he wasn't going through this transition to being the Three-Eyed Raven or whatever, he still might have a hard time processing everything that's going around with him. He still has lost his brother and his dog, and he's still crippled and, you know, trying to figure out his role and his family, you know. So you could see his character being overwhelmed on many levels when you don't account for this massively complicated mystical element that's thrown into it. So,
in general, I think that the second life concept, just to talk about that a little more, is something that comes up more in the books. As far as a skin changer, when they die, they can sometimes live on in one of their animals. And that is sort of where she's going with that. And, you know, so maybe the voice and the personality or essences of the personality of all the previous Three-Eyed Ravens could be part of that, you know, part of what's going on in his head.
How old was the Three-Eyed Raven before Bran? Was he like 8 years old?
About 125.
Okay, so is that, do we know, is that typical?
We do not know. We do not know.
Do we have an idea of how many Three-Eyed Ravens there have been?
We assume that there's... We don't know. We have no idea. It might just be there's always one, but that doesn't seem... I don't know.
Do we know how old the Three-Eyed Raven was when he became the Three-Eyed Raven?
Yeah.
Approximately.
Roughly, yeah. He was in his late 60s.
Okay, so he already had a full life to have context of, you know, the emotions and histories of man or whatever when he becomes a Three-Eyed Raven. Bran doesn't even have that.
Yeah, I believe he was born in 175, and he went to the Wall in 236, and vanished beyond the Wall in, I think, 239, or maybe it was all the way to 252. But yeah, so in his 60s or 70s, pretty old, like around Mormont's age. But he was a badass in his time, so he was probably still doing things. He vanished on arranging, and so it wasn't like... People just assumed he died, but he, in fact, he didn't die. he joined a tree. Okay, from another question from Lady Liana Kelly. The scene cuts from Cersei talking about recovering things, here's where we were before, to Littlefinger with the cat's paw dagger. More than a coincidence, she asks. I think this is a critical mystery to what is going to happen. Once again, the show is putting the question to the audience. Why did that assassin have such a valuable, traceable dagger? Well... She's suggesting maybe it wasn't Joffrey. In the books, it's almost certainly Joffrey that sent the cat. And that's why it's so clumsily done. He picked a dagger that was too obvious. And something only Joffrey would do something dumb like that. That's part of why we're supposed to think it was Joffrey. Part of the evidence that was just really badly done. Yeah, it was sloppy. And especially considering who the cat's paw was. Just some random, like, drunken person sleeping in the stables. You know, it was just really... Very sloppy. Does not seem like Cersei isn't a genius, but she's not that kind of sloppy. That just doesn't seem like her MO. So, but I agree that there could be more to it. The dagger, I do think, is a stand-in for Dark Sister from the books, and that is an important part of why Arya has it now. And I think arming her with Valyrian steel is kind of important. But yeah, I'm skeptical on there being a deeper meaning to this, and I'm very skeptical of Cersei being involved in this, because she, of course, kind of expresses that. You know, she tells Jaime that he acted rashly. Jaime's like, what? You wanted me to kill him? It's like, she's like, no, we could have scared him into, you know, into silence. And she's like, oh, what do you mean? You know, so like,
what if it doesn't work? How do we make sure that?
So Cersei wasn't really big on killing Bran in the first place. That's another reason I'm skeptical of this, but I think it's worth considering for sure. Okay. Still time for a few more. Looks like most of y'all are sticking with us. That's great. Thanks very much. A couple people wanted us to talk about Jaime's charge and how it was unrealistic for him to charge with while not holding the reins. This is standard, actually. This is not unrealistic at all. Just think about a joust. They have a shield and a lance. They're not holding the reins there either. A horse, most of what guiding a horse is with your legs, not the reins. The reins is like to stop them and to change, sometimes to change direction. But if you just kick the horse with your spurs, it's going to go straight. So once he lines the horse up, he doesn't need the reins. He just goes straight from there. So that's totally realistic. And that some of that, in fact, comes from people who are experts at horse riding. So I didn't just make that up myself. Cody Wilson and Sarvesh C and others are talking about the possibility and prediction that Jon convinces Dany to let him take Jaime north as a prisoner to keep him away from Tyrion as a temptation, i.e., you know, freeing him or talking him into betrayal. And to have a witness to the Army of the Dead. Interesting idea. Obviously, nothing the trailers gives us any clue to that. But that's a cool idea. I think that Jaime's more likely to send someone she trusts north to be a witness. But she could send multiple people. And maybe she forces Jaime to take the Black. You know, it's like, this is your way out. This is the only thing you could, like, you're not going to kill you because your brother doesn't want me to kill you. But you're not be going free. So you can take the Black. That could be.
You know, I could also see Tyrion going to the Wall.
Yeah, it's possible. Maybe,
He's been there before, he's traveled with Jon, and he could also come back and tell Dany the reality of the situation and she would trust him.
Good point, from Andrew Wagner, I had heard a theory, or really more of an observation, about the prince who was promised and the dragons out of stone. Could this apply to Jon, as he is the one that is mining dragon glass, taking dragon out of the stone? That's an interesting interpretation. Making dragons out of stone. I don't know. I think it's more like, Yeah, I guess that's possible. I don't know. That's an interesting interpretation. I've never seen that before. And I do think Dany literally waking dragons from stone is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
But this is something, I mean, because it's possible that they both can, you know, they both check off a lot of boxes on this prince that was promised prophecy. It could be both of them. You know, they could both. There's no reason why, like, it's one of the things George likes to do with his trope breaking is that to spin existing tropes into slightly different things. So maybe there isn't just one. Maybe the prophecy doesn't refer to just one person. It can be multiples, you know? And that would leave this open as a possibility. That would be a way for this to be, to check off that particular box, maybe in a very indirect way.
Maybe them as a couple is the, especially if it's a vague gender thing, you know, that could be what was promised.
Yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily like that. I think there's some split opinions on that. In fact, I'll say I don't like that. I don't like that being the prophecy, but I don't like the idea of Jon and Dany developing a romantic relationship. I think it's, I don't want to say it's too obvious.
Yeah, it'll probably happen for political reasons, whether they fall in love or not at all.
I do like that idea. I like the idea that they would have a marriage, a political marriage, even if they don't necessarily have a love for each other.
Question from Oisin Fitzpatrick. Why doesn't Rob have his own statue in the crypts? The Starks have had Winterfell back for a while, so have had the time to build a statue or at least start it. It's odd that Arya doesn't mention him not having one when she and Sansa are talking in the crypts, and if there was one, why did they not look at it as well? Well, I agree, there's not one. That's a good question. Never thought of that. They probably should do that, and they probably should. It should be easier to find people who know what Rob looked like than what Ned looked like. Maybe some of his armies still survived out there somewhere. Some people that knew.
It might be a matter of time and resources, like how quickly after Rob was killed was Theon taking over Winterfell.
Yeah. Well, Rob was killed after Theon took over Winterfell, but yeah, still, same difference.
More clearly why it might not have happened the way it normally would.
Right? But you would think that maybe that's something they could do. It's not like it wouldn't slow down their... They have other things to worry about with winter coming on, but one person doing a stone carving doesn't take away their effort. But it's possible that they are just using every stone carver on, like, building up the defenses, restoring castles elsewhere in the north, things like that, so... I wouldn't assume that it's just an oversight, but it kind of looks like one. Maybe it's another one. That's another one line of dialogue thing they could knock out.
It also might be revealed by the end of the season, you know, like maybe they're working on it now. You
know. Acre Frey wants to know, has it been answered? What is Easton Sean are drinking tonight? Yes, we're nothing exciting today. Sean's just having Coke and I'm having my usual coffee. So sorry to disappoint. Question from Ghost. Ooh, Q&A. Will we see Tourney at Harrenhal in flashback or no more flashbacks? I think we're bound to see at least another flashback or two. The Tourney at Harrenhal, though, I think that might be a lot, really hard to pull off. It's a big that would be a big presentation. They maybe just show a little bits and pieces of it, you know, but like, that's a lot. That's a, that would be an expensive scene to shoot, to have all that heraldry and all these different like houses that we haven't seen, and maybe showing some of the action. But I do think there'll be more flashbacks. I'm a little down on the possibility of that particular one.
That would be cool for a spinoff, you know, part of the original Targaryen takeover. But I don't see it happening here. But I do see a lot more flashbacks and visions happening. That is something I do expect, because those are the types of things that they wouldn't put in trailers. And so we've used up most of the trailer shots and have a lot of material still to go. So I think we'll be seeing more flashbacks and visions.
Okay. Someone says in all caps in the chat, Night of the Laughing Tree is a requirement. Yeah, we might get that. We might. Night of the Laughing Tree is a book thing that Lyanna may have put on man's armor and jousted in place of in defense of Helen Reed. And then Aerys was like, who is that mystery knight? That's no friend of mine. And Rhaegar tasks Rhaegar with going up to find who it is. Rhaegar only finds the shield, and it's a laughing weirwood shield. And next thing you know, Rhaegar and Lyanna are together, you know? So it's that might, but they see, the thing is, as awesome as it would be and as perfect as it would be to show that as a flashback, they can tell the Rhaegar and Lyanna love story in a different way. But that would be the, to me, that would be my favorite way for them to do it. But
that would be
They're not bound to it. Yeah, Night of the Laughing Tree, get hype, Iontrone says. I agree, Iontrone. If that happens, though, I don't think it'll be this season, but maybe part of the cinematic extras from season 8. You know, not extras, but just the fact that they're going to spend more money, have bigger budget, and do cinematic stuff. It might wait for that. Okay, from Adeste Fidelis. Will the Iron Bank offer Cersei the services of the Faceless Men and set up an Arya-Jaqen showdown? Wow, I didn't consider that possibility. It's something that we've talked about a lot in our book analysis, is what kind of relationship does the Iron Bank have with the Faceless Men? They're both super ancient institutions that date back to the founding of Braavos. There's no way they're not aware of each other. There's no way they don't occasionally do business. And there's all these rumors about when someone reneges on a contract with the Iron Bank, those leaders just have a way of being assassinated. And like, well, who else would be doing these assassinations, right? Who else? Why would they not turn to the Faceless Men, some of the best assassins in the world, if not the best?
Well, there is a reason they wouldn't.
The charge.
Exactly, yeah, right? It's like a expensive third of your value or something.
Well,
right?
They may have a special deal with the Iron Bank because of their ancient connections, you know? There may be a deeper connection between the Faceless Men and the Iron Bank. It's been widely theorized for many years in the fandom. What is the connection between those two organizations? So this is absolutely possible, but I'm not sure. It might be a little too a stretch for them to actually try to do that, but I like the idea.
The as cool as it is, the fact is, the less they do with the Faceless Men, the better, as far as I'm concerned, because I think it's, I'm hesitant to be too critical, but it's sort of a writing crutch. When a character can just be another character at any time, it makes it harder for us to believe and care about what's going on. You know what I mean? So I think they need to keep that at a minimum as much as they possibly can.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, another question. Actually, we'll make this the final question before we start our thanks and a couple of shout-outs, but the question is from Terrell Reed. Is there gold hidden in the village? Thanks there, Tickler. Is there gold in the village? Is there gems? Is there food? Where is the Brotherhood? That's the question I want to know. Where is the Brotherhood? Hopefully going to get to Eastwatch. We'll hopefully see them this episode. About time we caught up with them. It's been several episodes without the Brotherhood. It's about time we see them. That is a fitting end to the Q&A portion and the episode in general.